What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Rebunked. My name is Scott, coming at you live from Nashville, Tennessee, and I got a fantastic episode for you this evening. Just want to show you guys real quick how you can follow and support the show. So, of course, if you head over to rebunked.substack.com, that's the best way to stay up to date with the show. That's where you can it's basically my email list, so you can sign up for free, get email notifications about every time I go live or any updates related to the show. As you can see, here's today's episode. Also, a great way to support the show, there's an option of doing like a $5 a month subscription, which really helps keep the lights on around here. So if you guys get any value out of the show and you want to return that value, you can sign up for that. Otherwise, it is free. I do want to encourage you to sign up just for free, just for the heck of it, because that way you can know what's going on around here. Besides that, you guys, all you Bitcoin bros that are making millions of dollars out there, if you want to hit your boy up with some of them Satoshis you got floating around, you can hit me up there. Somebody actually donated. I don't know who it was. Like, thank you so much, whoever you are out there who dropped a little coinage in the wallet. I appreciate that. But if you guys feel compelled, again, value for value, if you guys get value out of the show, you can return it that way. Otherwise, all the other ways to support the show are at the main webpage, rebunked.news. You see the affiliates, which includes Richard Grove's Autonomy, which I know they're about to start season 11. So if you guys are wondering how to get all these entrepreneurial skills that I talk about a lot, I gained a lot of that through Autonomy. I was able to, what was it? Season 8, season 9, I went through it. But anyway, it's a fantastic course. I learned so much. If you guys click that link, go through the obstacle course and see if it's right for you. That helps support the show. Of course, you have Truth TRS Heavy Metal Detox and the Give, Send, Go if you want to just drop in a tip. And then the t-shirt shop, you guys. I got all kinds of shirts. The logo, the Beavis Are You Threatening Me shirt. Of course, the shirt I'm wearing right now, the Compliance is Violence shirt. Like, when you comply and go along with what they tell you to do, people die. You know, compliance is violence. And it's just like, that's just it's just a mess. Of course, I got $30 hoodies. You can't find a $30 hoodie anywhere in the universe except the Rebunk t-shirt shop. You know what I'm saying? We got women's shirts, hats, beanies, and stickers. So all kinds of ways to support the show. You know, I appreciate any support that you guys feel in your heart to impart. And we're just going to keep doing this damn thing. So without further ado, thank you guys for sticking around. Hopefully, did Rumble ever catch up here? What a bunch of fucking bastards. See, Rumble does this stupid thing where you have to do this stupid thing every time you set up a stream. And if you miss one tiny little step while you're setting it up, the whole thing screws up. It's the only website that does it. I'm not playing a victim. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying, Rumble, even though they've really helped me maintain my free speech throughout all the chaos, like, they make it very difficult for content creators sometimes. So I apologize. Worst case scenario, I will upload the stream as soon as we're done to Rumble. And I apologize because I know a lot of the listeners were counting on that link to watch the show. So yeah. So anyway, people will figure it out. People will figure it out. But in the meantime, let's bring in our guest. It's Liev Dalton from Beyond Terrain. Awesome Instagram page. You guys have to follow it. All kinds of practical wisdom, not only related to terrain science, but also, you know, using logic and actually applying critical thinking to analysis of the world around us and making conclusions based off of that, not hyperbole and not memes, not what the mainstream media wants you to say, but actual reality-based evidence. So, Liev, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you for having me on. First live stream I ever did. So,
oh, really? Yes. Well, dude, as you get down your podcast journey, you know what I mean? Like, well, when I first started podcasting, we would always pre-record, right? You'd always pre-record, and then yeah. Gave you the luxury of kind of editing. Like, if there was hiccups, like what you just saw, like, obviously I would edit all that out. But it's like, but when you're doing it live, it's like, you get to see all the nuts and bolts. You get to see all the warts and the bruises, and it's just like, it is what it is. And so I enjoy live streaming just because it just helps my workflow. I don't have to upload anything. I just, as soon as I'm done, it's out. That's nice. But it's raw. It's real. You know what I mean? And then you get the people interacting in the chat. And I think that a lot of people find the value, the actual value is like the interaction piece. And so I see, and I've also noticed that a lot of these platforms like YouTube, they kind of prioritize live streams. So it's like, they'll actually like bump you up like an algorithm, like if you're live streaming versus doing pre-recorded episodes. But there's a way to trick the algorithm. So they have Like this software StreamYard, you can pre-record an episode, but then you can live stream it through like streaming software. I know you can do that with OBS too. So you can actually live stream a pre-recorded episode and kind of trick the algorithms into thinking that it's that you're live. So there's ways around it.
That's
but
cool.
Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, man, welcome to the show. So I guess we kind of talked briefly before the show, like kind of where I'm at with the terrain thing. And I figured maybe it'd be useful for me to kind of give you my, where I'm at with the whole thing. And then that'll, and then you can talk about your background on it. And so I basically, obviously 2020 was a huge wake up for everybody. Like I've been looking into like government corruption and like, I could talk about aliens and flat earth and all this stuff. You know what I mean? Like for years and years before like 2020 happened. And 2020 happened, my whole paradigm was shattered in so many different ways. And that's when I started podcasting and really looking into the medical side of things, like seeing the medical tyranny. I was living out in Oregon, you know? So, and I know you're up in Canada. So it's like, I know like in a place that was very, very, very oppressed from all of the COVID lockdown measures and everything, you know? So I experienced that myself, and it was a real wake up call. Like, okay, I need to get active and start learning more about what's going on in the world around me. And a big piece of that was the Western medicine paradigm, right? And mm-hmm. knowing that right away that they're going to come after us with a mandated vaccine. Like that was, I knew that was going to be a part of it from like April, like March of 2020. We knew that was going to be part of the formula, you know, so much of this stuff that ended up happening. But then as I continued on this path, like basically my journey over these last few years has just been like a jihad against the pharmaceutical industry and against like Western medicine in general. And I came across the whole, I came across terrain science along that journey. And I was like, wait a minute, what? Hold on now. Are you telling me that germs aren't the cause of disease, right? Like what's going on here? And so obviously at first I'm like, okay, no, that's crazy talk. But then the first book I read was Goodbye Germ Theory by Dr. William Trebbing. And I've had multiple interviews with him and conversations with him. Like he's a good dude. Like you know, I actually chat text with him all the time. And like I've had a couple conversations with Dr. Cowan and you know, a lot of these folks that are in the sphere just trying to unpack it and understand it from Alex Zek. We've had Alex Zek on, and it's just like trying to understand this from a practical perspective, because for me it fits into the work I'm trying to do, because I feel that like Western medicine and particularly the pharmaceutical industry relies on the narrative of the germs and the viruses. And so if there's any way that we can mass adopt consciousness and awakening to the fact that that isn't the case, then it would by default just completely cripple and topple the pharmaceutical industry as we know it. And so this is the attack vector that I see a lot of fruit that could potentially be bared out of. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. So, and I understand you were kind of in kind of pursuing like a medical degree and whatnot. And so I'm really curious to hear kind of like your background and like where you were before and what kind of your awakening to all this was.
Yeah. Well, I agree that this is a great way to kind of target the entire structure of medicine and science in general. But yeah, starting out, I was, you know, growing up, we were always kind of a little, we always liked to question, me and the boys, we always liked to question kind of what our teachers said and things like that. But, you know, I was in the sciences. I went to school, went to university, pursued biochemistry. I was going to become a dentist, actually a dental surgeon. And so I was in my second year, and that's when COVID hit. And, you know, kind of just turned my world upside down, right? But you know, before that, I was in science. I was fully on the other side, man. I was viruses, bacteria, vaccines, you name it. That was my, like, you know, the science was there. We had the science to back it up, not knowing I was just mostly just appealing to authority. Because you know, you're not even really taught about the fundamental science, even in university, right? You're kind of just taught everything as a fact. You're taught these theories and these models, and you know, you're not taught about the studies that actually prove anything in university. They don't teach you how we know this. They just teach you, this is what we know. Because if they taught you, this is how we know this, it would be fairly obvious to a lot of people that we don't know this. So, yeah, I mean, COVID hit, that was a catalyst for my awakening. to kind of the medical industry, to the science, to the faulty scientific industry. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was initially in February, I was looking into, like, February 2020, I was looking into how it was caused by a lab leak in Wuhan and things like this, and how it couldn't have originated from bats in a cave. It was too far away. And I was looking at the kind of evidence there. And then I stumbled upon Andrew Kaufman's channel and watched a video that was quotes refuting germ theory. And I went down to that comment section and left a paragraph of a comment. And that's something that I never, ever do. I wasn't even on social media at the time. You know, and I left a paragraph saying, you know, we know the mechanisms of viral entry and blah, blah, blah. I went on and on and on. And somebody kindly sent me a link to another video, and down the rabbit hole I went. And so I was just studying a lot of Dr. Kaufman's work. And, you know, that was really amazing, because then, you know, obviously snowballed into learning more about the literature, learning more about the history. I really learned a lot about the whole AIDS debacle. Goodbye Germ Theory was actually the second book I read. The first book I read was Invented the AIDS Virus by Peter Duisberg. And
Duisberg, yep.
Yeah, fantastic. Both fantastic books. But yeah, I mean, I was fishing lobster at the time. My semester finished and I was fishing lobster, and I would come home and I was just so tired. And I would just sit on my computer and I would do research for, like, you know, 6-7 hours and hang out with family and just kind of chill. But, you know, it kind of just flipped my world upside down, and it was slow progress. Like, it started with viruses and moved into, you know, I thought, okay, so viruses don't cause disease, but bacteria definitely do. And then eventually that was shattered as well. And then on, we moved to mold and fungus and parasites. And then we realized that, okay, neurochemical imbalances don't cause depression or anxiety or schizophrenia. Even inflammation doesn't cause any diseases. Genetics don't cause any diseases. And kind of the whole house of cards just came down. We use all these scapegoats as kind of a way to keep a victim mentality in my mind. You know, I think it blaming these factors that are out of our control are a way to remove us from taking the responsibility. And I think that's one of the main problems with, society nowadays, is that there's a lack of responsibility, whether it be for our own health, for our own well-being, for our own financial health, you know, for our own families. So you could definitely extend this conversation out quite a ways. And yeah, it definitely, you know, kind of everything, the whole house cards just came down, and then it was building from the ground up. So, you know, I learning a lot about epistemology, learning a lot about logic, learning a lot about, you know, how we actually know things, how we can know something for sure, you know, really getting back to the very, very basics, because even in the alternative health world, I find there's a lot of bullshit that I just, you know, I can't back, you know, like, if you're blaming something, if there's any fear whatsoever, it's not good for you. You know, if you're able to blame something, it's not good for you. It's not real, because sovereignty, responsibility, you know, freedom, that it's the only way forward. It truly is the only way to true well-being, you know, and not that everyone's dealt an equal hand, you know. That doesn't make any sense. It's not true. It's not seen in nature. It's absurd. So it's about taking responsibility, understanding where you are, you know, learning about yourself, learning about what you can. But of course, it always begins with knowing yourself. But anyways, I'm kind of getting away from the question, man. Here. So I'll throw back at you there.
Oh man. Like, there's so much good stuff in there. Like just the evolution of just kind of deconstructing all of these paradigms that are just ingrained within us. Like, it's like, it's uncomfortable to even question these things. You know what I mean? Like, there's for so many different reasons. Like, it's uncomfortable on a personal level to kind of realize that everything I've learned up until now is based on a lie and fabricated. And, you know, it's just this whole idea of, like, you know, well, how many people would need to be in on, like, that's one of the things I hear about, like, virology all the time. It's like, well, so you're just telling me that, like, all of them are just lying. Like, is that what it is? Like, are they all in on it? Like, how many people would have to be in on it? Or, like, if you talk about, like, 9/11 as being not exactly what we've been told, things like that. It's like, you know, how many people would have to be in on it? And it's like, well, it's based on a belief. And I was just listening to another podcast earlier today. They were talking about this topic. It's based on a belief almost to a religious level. And that's where like the science, the scientism, like virology, it's based on dogma. And it's like a religious belief. It's like in this other podcast, they were talking about like, you know, there's so many people that believe in like the crucifixion and the resurrection of Christ. You know, it's like, do you know how many people would have to be in on it for that thing to be true? It's like the same exact argument both ways. It's like, you know, it's really the exact same argument. And so it's fascinating to embark on this journey and then come to these new understandings that contradict everything that society enforces us that we need to believe. And so it can be kind of scary out there in the wilderness. You know, it can be kind of a frightening place to be. Did you experience any of that? Did you find yourself, you know, like your friends or social circles or anything like that? Did you find any sort of like ostracization or anything like that?
Not with my close friends.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny. I came home like from university, met with all the boys, and we're sitting in the car, like eating a burger or something. And, you know, we're talking, I'm like, boys, I'm like, there's no virus, man. Like, you know, the virus doesn't exist. All of this is a hoax. PCR test is a flaw. You know, they're going on. And then one of my buddies looks over at me. He goes, you ever hear of Agenis Vonder planets? And I'm like, no, man, I never heard of them. And then he's like, you'd love them, man. And it's funny, I didn't even take his advice at the time and look it up. So even my boys,
I like, don't know this. Who's this? Who's this? What do I need to write something down?
Okay.
What is it?
Agenis Vonder planets, AAJONOUS. And then Vonder planets is easier to spell, I think, a little bit. But
he's big. Okay.
Yeah, he's big into like, he's passed now, but he's a raw meat guy. So he's healed a lot of people consuming a raw animal diet. Very, very interesting guy. Saw through the whole germ theory for a very long time. His story is amazing. And so, yeah, I guess he is kind of a small, like a lesser known guy, but yeah, really into eating raw, but definitely not a victim mentality kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's healed his own conditions, healed a lot of people. So super interesting. Check him out. But
yeah, I got a note here to check him out. I've never heard of this. So this is fascinating.
Yeah, cool. Dude. Oh, he's great, man. He's great. He speaks very well too. A lot of content, that he's put out too over the years. Like he's been in the game for a long time too. So yeah, I mean, so with the boys, it was all good. Like, you know what I mean? There's always a few people pushing back. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. I wanted to comment on this, that it's not that people are in on it.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of think that's an interesting way to look at it, you know, and not that it's absurd either. Right. Because you're thinking, okay, well, if it's a hoax, then all these people are just, it's a theater. Right. But a lot of people are just misguided. Right. And if you look at the structure of, you know, how people learn things through the school systems, through the university systems, you know, once you finish high school, you got 10 years before you're a doctor. And that's 10 years that if you don't study all the time, then you're not going to pass and you won't become a doctor. So it's like, it's set up in a way that people are just misguided. Right. And you got to look at where they're getting their money from. And right. There's so many problems with the institutionalized aspect of learning. Mm-hmm. Right. And you could tie it back into the history as well. Like looking at the Rockefellers creating the curriculums. Right. So it's, you know, it's a systemic issue, and it's not that people are in on like it, you know, they're
totally.
I would say that it's obvious that there are a group of people at the top who maybe call the shots, but you know, as you're moving down, even politicians just seem like puppets to me. And
oh yeah,
you know, I don't think they know any better than, you know, they're kind of just, you know, they're kind of just playing this role rather than being in on something, you know, because it's almost better if people aren't in on it, right? Like if it's not this,
compartmentalized, that's one of the key strategies. Yeah. You compartmentalize everybody. Everybody has their role. Nobody knows what the guy next to him's doing, and they can't ask questions.
So it's
interesting. I mean, yeah, it's such an interesting way to put it, dude. It's like, and I don't think everybody's in on it. I think that like virology has some basic problems with some of the axioms that they operate on. Some of the things is the foundational principles that they take for granted that they teach everybody that are just based on, you know, this is like this just is self-evident. This just is what it is. Like, you know, and, but it's like, but is it though? But they base so much of it. It's like a building off on a foundation of sand. You know what I mean? Like, and so that's why I love like a lot of the terrain guys, like, you know, Alex Zach and all those guys, like they're big on like deconstructing the axioms of virology and being like, no, where you're starting is a non-starter. You can't start here because this is flawed. And also therefore everything, it's like the fruit of the poison tree, like everything you've built off of this wrong assumption is wrong. And so that's the whole idea of it, you know, the whole isolating the viruses and the purification and doing all that crap. Like I've heard you talk about that. Like it's genius. You know what I mean? That the idea of like isolating the, you know what I mean? Like, it's just nonsense. It's just crazy.
Yeah. And you know, it's kind of funny too. Like I'm really glad that I'm fresh out of university mm-hmm. because it's fresh in my mind what was taught, right? We learn Koch's postulates in the introduction to microbiology in second year. You learn that. And in every biology class, they love to do one lecture on history where they teach you about Louis Pasteur, they teach you about Robert Koch, they teach you about Edward Jenner, they teach you about all these people who created these vaccines and did all of this amazing stuff for pharma. And, you know, they obviously give you a half history. It's certainly not holistic in any respect. And then
did they teach you about Bechamp at all? Did they talk about Bechamp?
No, Bechamp. No, nothing. Imagine and you that. Know, it's funny because, you know, like, you know, they'll teach us about this. They'll say that everything that they did was a fact. They don't show us any papers. They're not showing you papers. It's like, oh, this history is just true. And it's one lecture, right? And you barely get tested on it too. So they really don't want you looking into it. You know, and with Koch's postulates, it's admitted that it doesn't apply to viruses, right? So there's this guy, Thomas Rivers, that actually redid Koch's postulates. And, you know, he actually went at Robert Koch and was like, you know, your postulates are useless. They're unattainable. They're impossible to actually implement into a scientific study. And he even mentioned bacteria as well in this, right? So he created a new set of postulates, which make it easier to prove that there's a viral like causal factor or that there's a bacterial factor. You know, it's usually applied to viruses, but in university, his name was never, ever mentioned. And, you know, it's just interesting that even though all of virology relies on Rivers' postulates, not Koch's postulates, because it's admitted that you cannot apply Koch's postulates. We're still taught that Koch's postulates are how you prove the existence of a causal relationship between a microbe, and they don't differentiate. Like, it's not clear at all, you know, it's not clear at all that this doesn't apply to viruses. It wasn't taught in our university courses at all. So it's just ridiculous. Like, they're not even teaching their whole side. They're just taking the real heavy hitters that are really easy to defend. Like Pasteur, Jenner, you know, they'll even go back to Leeuwenhoek, who invented the microscope, you know, or maybe even Ivanovsky, who did the tobacco mosaic virus and tried to prove that the relationship between a virus there. But if you go and you look at what they actually did, so if you go and you look at Jenner's papers, if you look at Koch's papers, if you look at even Ivanovsky's papers, you know, there was never an isolation even attempted. Robert Koch just took ground tubercles and just pretty much just injected them into guinea pigs or hamsters, right? You know, they didn't try to isolate it. So he's sitting here saying, oh, well, my postulates, here's my logic. Here's the logic behind what I'm doing. You got to take it. You got to isolate it, blah, blah, blah. Everyone knows Koch's postulates by now. But he never actually isolated anything, and they still don't isolate anything. They still don't, you know, and when they try to isolate something, it just never produces results. And that doesn't sell, obviously. So they add chemicals to the mix. I don't know if you want me to elaborate on this. I don't know.
Please do it, man. It's
probably heard about it.
You know, let's go for it, because, you know, I can always use refreshers on the verbiage of it. And I'm sure there's maybe somebody out there that hasn't heard this whole process. So I think it's useful. So yeah, take it away.
Cool. I mean, so you can look at it from different, you got to break it down a little bit. So we'll talk about, if we want to talk about viruses, we can talk about viruses first. I'll try and keep it fairly simple and concise here. But, you know, what they're doing is essentially they're going to take a material out of the body, right? Often it's mucus or it's something like this. But say if it were polio, they would take it out of the spinal cord. So wherever the virus is supposedly present in the body, they take the sample. They centrifuge it, which is spin it around really quick to kind of separate it all. And then they're going to filter it, right? So they're going to try and remove all the big debris and remove all the small debris to leave only the size of the supposed microbe. How they know the size, you know, now they kind of just guess that it's about between 100 and 500 nanometers. So they'll create this filtrate, right? And in this filtrate, they claim to have, you know, pure virus. And it's kind of funny because, like, maybe it is a more pure version of a virus in this filtrate, but it's never been visualized. It's never been tested positive in any sort of PCR test, even though electron microscopy is problematic. Polymerase chain is problematic. You know, it's never caused disease in anybody. It only causes diseases once it's cultured. So they add it to a culture. So they take this filtrate that's the most pure that a virus could ever possibly be, because they separate it out by size, and they add it to this culture. And it's important to note that it's certainly not pure, right? We don't have any specific filters for viruses, right? It's just anything that's along this 100 to 500 nanometer size. So they take this, they add it to a culture. The culture is usually monkey kidney cells, Vero cells. Yep. And in the culture, they add antimycotics, which are antifungals, antibiotics, pH indicators, pH stabilizers. They add cytokines. They add bovine serum or another animal's serum to feed the culture. You know, there's a plethora of chemicals in here. And so with that culture, that's what they're using in these. That is their purified virus, right? That's what they're using when they say we've isolated the virus. They take that and they say, okay, well, we've produced cytopathic effects, which is cell breakdown. Okay, so how do you know the cell broke down? Well, we captured it with electron microscopy. Okay, so let's look at electron microscopy real quick. When you
I got to show you this. This is insane. Hold on. I was going to pull up an image to let's remember where you left off.
Electron microscopy.
Okay.
I got it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I was just going to pull up an image to kind of go along with what you were describing there. I just typed this into Google. I typed in isolated virus and it says, it looks like there aren't many great matches for your search. I literally just typed isolated virus. It says, looks like there aren't many great matches for your search. Isn't that crazy?
You got to take a screenshot of that. That's hilarious. What the
fuck? That's the craziest thing I've ever seen. Like, Google just ratted on itself.
Dude, that's hilarious, man. That is really good.
Oh, they're going to fix the glitch after this show. But, man, that's wild. Oh, definitely. Anyway, okay. Anyway, I go, that's so funny.
So they want to observe these cytopathic effects, right? So what they do is they do an electron microscopy. And so electron microscopy, essentially what you need to do to prepare a sample for electron microscopy is you need to stain it with heavy metals, usually, because these help kind of visualize the sample. You need to dehydrate it. You need to freeze it. You need to section it into a very, very thin sample, because electron microscopy actually works by beaming high density light through the sample, and through the diffraction you can kind of get a picture. That's why they're all very blurry and fuzzy, and you know, so there are all these steps that are, yeah, exactly, here.
But see, it's like so these are the very minimal results, but see, it's like these blurry fuzzy things with it, all the rest, like everything that people have in their minds of what a virus, it's all computer generated.
It's all computer, exactly.
It's all computer generated. Like,
yeah, it's foolish. And yeah, it's absolutely foolish, really. Yeah, yeah, you see the electron microscopy versus what we're, and you know, they don't show you electron microscopy in university. They don't show it to you in textbooks. They show you these computer generated models.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just hilarious. But yeah, I mean, none of these steps are controlled. So electron microscopy has never been controlled using the scientific method, because you can't visualize a sample without staining it with heavy metal. So how do you know the heavy metals didn't alter the sample? How do you know the freezing didn't alter the sample? How do you know the dehydration
or any one of those additives, if any of those have any sort of effect?
And the additives in the first place. Absolutely. I'm going to circle back to that real quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'll let you hop in real. So with that, you know, Harold Hillman actually disproved that that it's possible to visualize something. It's all artifacts under electron microscopy. Anything under electron microscopy has no control and is completely invalid. So they also test the sample with PCR based on computer generated sequences of viruses because they've never isolated a virus before being able to test it. So all of these samples don't have a gold standard. And when you're looking at the sample itself, Stefan Lanka controlled the viral culturing process in which he did the exact same steps in creating a viral culture, but did not add any filtrate to it. So he didn't add any virus. He was still able to confirm results using electron microscopy. He was still able to prove that there are viral particles, whatever they really are. They're really just laboratory artifacts. And so in essence, that's virology. You know, they try to complicate it a little bit. They'll talk about cytopathic effects and mock infections. I've yet to find a paper that actually describes their mock infection. Usually it's a mock infection should be the exact same parameters, but usually they just use a pure culture of cells without any of the pH indicators, the pH stabilizers, antimitotics, antibiotics, bovine serum. They just use pure cells that don't have any chemicals as their mock infected group, which again, you're not using a valid control. If you were to actually control any viral study, you would use the exact same setup, right? So it's fundamentally flawed in science, and the papers are convincing. And I think this is important to understand about papers. Papers are they're rhetoric, right? They're actually meant to convince the reader of the interpretation, right? So you get data, a result should be objective. The discussion section is a convincing argument. You know, here's why this happens. It could also happen because of this, but I'm correct. This is why I'm correct. And they try to back up their statement. So to really understand that, like, these papers are meant to convince the reader. This is what I was taught in my Writing for the Sciences course as well. You know, a good paper is a very convincing paper. And so if you're skimming through papers, you're reading abstracts. That's a terrible way to read science, by the way. If you just read abstracts, you're not reading science. But even if you just read discussions, you're missing all of the objectivity of science. If you look at the methods and the results, that is the most pure way to look at science. And that's something that's not done often. And I was guilty of it. You know, I was certainly guilty of it. You know, you look right at the abstract, you get the gist of the paper, boom, that's a fact. It's in a paper. Or you read the discussion to get a little extra info, boom, there's the paper. You don't assess the paper for its validity. So, you know, and going down the virology hole is kind of great. There's a lot of people talking about it now, like a lot of really great minds talking about it. And I'll say one more thing before I hand it back to you. Now is the first time in history where we have so many people working on the terrain. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at history, there's like one guy doing it at once. You had Bichon, then you had Enderline. You know, and you had Gaston Naissance, and then you have Berlando, you have Cohen, you have Kaufman, you have Zach, you know, you have all these great people, even if you're not directly doing the research, like Lanka's doing the research, but you know, he's not portraying it. He's not talking about it. You know, a lot of people are talking about it, learning about it, studying it. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's such an exciting time for science, in my opinion. The problem is just that the scientific profession has not caught up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we could figure out a way to monetize terrain, then we'd be in Bidno, and then we'd just fall in the same trap. But, you know, that's what it is, because, like, it's just, like, fundamentally not a profitable model, because it hinges on, like, people's individual responsibility. It's like, oh, you mean I actually have to, like, watch what I eat and, like, reduce the amount of toxins in my surroundings and stuff like that? Like, you know, it's not like I can take a pill and everything's fine. You know what I mean? Like, which is just emblematic of the society we live in. You know, you talked about it earlier, where it's like, everyone just wants to be handed the solution. Everybody wants the easy way out. Everyone wants, like, convenience and comfort, and unfortunately health and freedom is not comfortable, right? You know, just like reliance on a grocery store, like thinking that we have, like a lot of people think that comfort and convenience is freedom. the fact that I can walk into a grocery store and pick anything off the shelf that I can possibly imagine and exchange it for just a small amount of dollars that I exchange for my labor, right? Like, you know, you walk into a store and buy a thing of salt for like $2. Like in history, like they used to fight wars over salt. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's just like we live like emperors. Every single person is a freaking emperor. And I have this freedom to walk into any grocery store and pick any fruit from anywhere around the world, right? Like, that's freedom. But you know what? That's convenience. And we've been sucked into this trap of dependence on a system that doesn't have our best interest at heart. So what I would say is that mentality of walking into the grocery store and buying whatever you want, that's slavery. You're enslaved to that system. You are dependent on a system that fundamentally doesn't care about you. You know what I mean? So freedom would be the complete opposite of that, completely taking charge of my food supply chains and completely taking charge of my community and resources. You know what I mean? But that takes effort. That's hard. You know what I mean? And so it's like freedom and individual responsibility when it comes to health, it can be a challenge. Like, we actually have to take a few additional extra steps in order to achieve the actual health that we need, right? And so, yeah, it's so much easier. Yeah, exactly. Meaningful. Yeah, any sort of meaningful change. And so it's like, maybe not everyone wants to hear that. Maybe that's a lot of the cognitive dissonance that people have is because it's like, oh, you mean I actually have to like do all this stuff? Like, I'd rather just eat cheeseburgers and take Prozac. Like, that just seems way better. Like, I'll just zone out, right? I don't know. So it is a paradigm shift, but you know, I think that the world's ready for it. The world's ready for it, man. Like, I think that we're at the cusp of this amazing time where people have been so disillusioned by science, by the scientific industry, just the whole scientific industrial complex. The idea that you can't question the science is the antithesis of what science is. You know, the whole thing is just falling under its own weight, the lies and the deceptions that it's been built on and carried it this whole time is starting to crumble as people are waking up, you know. And it's just such an amazing time to be alive, you know. The idea of building alternatives to all this, right? To building communities and people that are seeing through it and growing in it, like you're, you know, I was talking to Michelle, our mutual friend, and you know, she was talking about how like your channel's grown so much just over the last like little bit. And it's just like how, you know, like that's a sign that so many people are hungry for this information. You know what I mean? And one of the things I think that's so cool about your channel, for example, is that I hope you guys, there's links in the episode description. So please go give him a follow on Instagram, go subscribe to his YouTube channel. But you talk about like a lot of the kind of more philosophical level, like the logical fallacies and stuff like that. Like what got us into this mess in the first place and how we can be better going forward. You know, I started learning about this stuff recently myself. In the little intro there, I was talking about this course by this guy named Richard Grove, the course called Autonomy. And they do a great show. You'd actually probably like it. It's a great show. Every Sunday night, they do like an 8-hour show called Grand Theft World, which is a pretty intense show. He's like a big history guy. And he, you know, him and his co-host, they talk a lot about the logical fallacies. And that's where I started learning about that. And it's like just understanding that there's like an actual systematic approach to logic and to actually dissecting the reality that we have in front of us. So I guess my question would be like, what would you say is like a good place for people to start if they're trying to, you know, get the tools that they need to kind of unpack this information more, and from like a philosophical, logic, rhetoric, like all that stuff, like where would be a good place for them to start to unpack their reality around them?
Yeah, definitely my YouTube channel.
There you go. Do it.
No. Seriously though. This has been something that we've been talking about a lot. Like, honestly, I think it's central because, you know, I actually just bought this book and I haven't really cracked into it, but it was talking about, you know, teaching children, and it, you know, it was called the Trivium. Let me get
the Trivium method. They teach the Trivium method at yes, Grand Theft World community. And that was the first time I'd heard of the Trivium. I was like, wow, like, I didn't even know that there's like an actual approach and a science to actually applying learning and understanding the world around you. You know what I mean? I thought you just kind of just look at things and kind of like, I didn't know that there was such a systematic approach that's been around since like the Greeks. Like they perfected the idea of like figuring out the world around you, and we've completely lost that. But yeah, the Trivium method is phenomenal. Yeah. but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And so, I haven't cracked into it, but I kind of got the gist of it, you know? So, and it's funny because, so I mentioned my writing for the sciences course earlier, and my entire university degree, the $80,000 that I spent on that degree, that class was worth it alone. He was the most phenomenal professor I've ever encountered in my life because he taught me logic in that class. He taught me logic. He taught me grammar. He taught me how to spell properly. He taught me, you know, how to structure a sentence properly, the difference between passive and active speaking. And that's fundamentally part of this trivium as well. Grammar is fundamental. You know,
grammar, definitions, definitions too. Like definition. I didn't realize like there's such a huge role that definitions play. Like we kind of take it for granted. Yep. But as you can see, like in the world we live in today, there's so often trying to change definitions, right? And that definition is supposed to be like concrete. Like this is not a changing thing, you know what I mean? But the idea of like being able to shift and change definitions is really a very, it's like once you understand the trivium, it's like, oh, I see what they're doing. They're actually trying to sabotage like our ability to process and apply logic into these situations.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because the way you language things matters, right? The way that you actually use your words matters. So if you're talking about isolating something, you have to separate it from all other parts, right? You have to isolate it. You can't just say, oh, well, a viral isolation includes the cell culture. That's absurd, you know, because then you're using logic with the original meaning of the word isolation. And, you know, you're so far away from it in practice. So, yeah, I mean, learning about this stuff, it's great to start with logic. It's great to start with grammar. It's great to start with etymology, the meaning of words. There's a lot of great books. If you read the greats, like the anybody in antiquity talked about epistemology, about knowing, right? Philosophy is largely concerned with knowing, you know, just understanding, you know, and there's and this is something that like I've been really getting into a little bit more, like rationalism versus empiricism. You know, that's huge in science. Like science is always called like empirical, that it's all based on observation. The scientific method is based on observation. Fundamentally, it's based on observation, but there is a rationalism. There is this reasoning behind the scientific method. The scientific method does use a lot of inductive reasoning. Now, there's a lot of philosophers that spoke about this through history, you know, and the one that really invented the scientific method, Francis Bacon, you know, he was a big fan of the inductive method. Now, the problem is when you induce a little too much, you're getting completely away from the actual observation. That's why when you read a paper, you look at the results. Look at the results and try to think to yourself, you know, what can I interpret from this? You know, what does this mean? Well, you don't necessarily need to rely on somebody else to figure out what something means. You know, you can figure this out yourself, you know, if you are applying proper logic and reasoning. So the opposite coin here, or the opposite side of the coin of empiricism is rationalism. And it's in essence, rationalism is completely the contrasting epistemological approach here to acquiring knowledge, right? So essentially there's an innate knowledge given to humans and this is mathematics. It's arithmetic and geometry, you know, it's logic, it's logos, it's the word. And it's the divine, you know, these are all things that are innate within humans. Any native population believed in God. Don't tell me God doesn't exist. You know, that's absurd. Every single person left alone will end up believing in a higher power. You know, the divine is absolutely fundamental. Word, logic, reasoning. This is, again, fundamental. People can like separate two separate groups will come up with logic and reasoning, you know, these are innate pieces of knowledge that anything derived from them employed properly is fundamentally true. It's backed by God. It's backed by logic. It's backed by proper reasoning. And so anything can be thought of too, right? The mind is so powerful. Our consciousness is so powerful. But if you don't learn how to reason properly, you don't learn what makes sense, you know, you're not going to be employing this sort of deductive reasoning, this reasoning in general. You need to learn the basis. And logical fallacies, they're great to learn. I think they're important because they're so prevalent nowadays. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you just learn proper logic, you know, and I really started with the logical fallacies because one, you notice yourself doing that all the time, because we're kind of ingrained to think illogically, right? You're kind of ingrained. It's kind of ingrained in us. We all always appeal to authority and experts. And this is what's really taught to us, right? Even in school, if, can I go to the bathroom? It's like, no, you can't. You can't go take a piss. It's like, come on. Like you're just being bombarded with this appeal to authority from birth. Like, it's foolish, really. So we're not taught logic whatsoever. We're not taught proper vocabulary. Like, you know, the learning about the root word, like etymology. That's a word I was looking for there.
Yeah.
You know, it's really important. And, you know, it's funny. I actually just recorded an Instagram video. So you'll get a little sneak peek here. You know, there's a new logical fallacy that academics came up with. It was not talked about in antiquity whatsoever. And it's called the etymological fallacy. And so actually they say now it's illogical to look at the root of a word and derive any conclusion from that, which is just absolutely absurd. You know, I understand that words change. Words do change. I understand that. But when they change, the old meaning still carries through. So let's look at the word germ. Again, I just recorded a video on this.
Nice.
It's a germ before it was attributed to a microorganism. You know, it's a budding or sprouting. It's
germination.
Something changing. Germination, right? It's gonna change forms, it's gonna change shapes. And so if you look into pleomorphism, the changing natures of microorganisms in our body to adapt to our body, how microbes can actually start from these little microzyma, move into bacteria, yeast, and fungus based on the diseased conditions of the body. You know, it's kind of funny that they chose the word germ. Now, whether it was intentional or not, it just blows my mind that that's what they ended up using, a germ for these pathogenic organisms. It just blows my mind. And maybe it is illogical to draw a conclusion from this, but you know, I think there's other evidence. Obviously, you can observe this under a microscope, dark field microscopy, an unadulterated sample. But it's funny, intentional or not, there's this collective consciousness working. Like, there is this, you know, there's a need for the truth to prevail. You know, good always prevails, the truth always prevails. But you got to look at it. You know, there's a lot of things to look into. Look into rhetoric versus dialectic. Mm-hmm. You know, rhetoric is a means to convince people, used by politicians all the time, you know, even religious leaders, pretty much anybody on social media. And it's not that it's bad. I use a lot of rhetoric too on social media because it's what appeals to people, right? You appeal to logic, you appeal to reason, you appeal to emotion, you appeal to their values. You know, that's what rhetoric is. You can't constantly be engaged in a dialectic, which is a purely logical conversation, a back and forth, usually between two people, where it's purely based on logic and reasoning. There's no emotion involved. There's no value system involved. You're purely concerned with the truth. Now, there's a time and a place for both of these, right? And, you know, you should try and base what you're coming out of. Like, when I use rhetoric, like, I truly believe that everything that I'm learning and teaching on Instagram and things like this, it's fundamentally true. You know, I wouldn't be putting it out there if I wasn't absolutely sure that I was, you know, getting at something here. So, you know, rhetoric is a natural part of human existence. But to get to what you're going to convince people of, you know, you should be using a properly logical reasoning. Like, you should use reasoning. You should use logic. Yeah. So it's great to learn about it. It's great to learn.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fundamentally, grammar, definitions, words, and then get into logic, get into rhetoric, get into reasoning, get into the philosophy of how to know things, epistemology. And we talk about this all the time. I've been doing it on the YouTube a lot, like trying to do a little long form content on it. And it's been super fun to research, man. People have been talking about this forever. How to know
things. Exactly. How to know things.
Dumb time.
Anyways. Yeah, just look up the trivium, you guys, like grammar, logic, and rhetoric, like the idea of like how these pieces fit together in order to like interpret and understand things. It's like, I feel like we're moving into this crazy time in our history where it's like, you know, like AI, for example, is like kind of dominating so many different aspects. And, you know, that I've got, I can talk forever on all that, but it's like, you know, you hear talk of like them outsourcing so much to AI, like making like, you know, AI doctors and AI judges, you know, who are just the amalgamation of like human knowledge. Basically, they just learn off of the conglomeration of all previously acquired human knowledge in essence, right? So like, let's say we're going back to like these scientific papers that you're talking about, or a lot of the scientific papers that we know, like virology, virology scientific papers, you know, like these are, a lot of these are based on like flawed fundamental starting points, right? And so like, then if you train the AI to kind of internalize all that stuff and make its decisions based on all that, then it's like we've and then we're outsourcing our, you know, like the appeal to authority, the ad verecundium, like the appeal to authority fallacy, it's true because the expert says it's true. Well, there's going to be no bigger expert in the world than the AI. We're going to outsource everything to the AI. So the AI knows best. The AI is God. The AI knows everything. So I feel like we're entering this dangerous period in human history where it's like the AI is going to emerge as the ultimate authority figure that we're going to outsource everything off to. And if it's based on so many things that we've fed it that are flawed, then we're going to be left in this horrible place. So it's like, you guys, we can't outsource our thinking to the AI. Like that's not going to be a good thing. That's like scientism in full effect. Yeah, exactly. AI judges, right? Like the AI judges.
AI
like,
is the God, man. That is the higher power.
Exactly. Well, we got to not let it get to that point. Like, it's cool to like make me little whatever's. Like, I don't know. It can make me little fun things. Like, it's fun to trick it to say things it's not supposed to say. Like, as long as you can stay in like that realm, like I enjoy it for that purpose. But besides that, we can't like be outsourcing our thinking. So, man, holy crap. Like, we could go on forever and ever. I feel like we got a few minutes left here, and I know this is probably a loaded question that we could go on for another hour or so, but let me ask you this. So you completed your degree. Like, I know you kind of shifted. Well, what did you end up studying and getting your degree in?
Yeah. So I finished my degree in biochemistry and molecular biology.
Biochemistry. Okay.
Yeah. And so I actually started a master's of psychology right after.
Okay, cool. So where are you headed with this? I know you said you wanted to get into dentistry. I know you want to help people. I know that you have that within you that you want to help people. But now that you're on this new path, where are you going to focus your energy towards helping people within like the terrain element? And what advice would you give to people that are looking to heal in this regard? I know it's a loaded question but yeah.
Yeah, that's a big question. And I got lots of goals and dreams now. Yeah. Definitely more tailored to helping, right? That's fundamentally what it is. Right now I'm just doing, like, I go to school and I do the social media, the podcast, and everything kind of behind the scenes. It's just me. I don't make any money off it right now. I don't plan to monetize it. I don't plan to do anything of that nature. If I'm going to sell something, it's gonna be something that I produce. I'm not a huge supplements guy. Yeah. We kind of, with the terrain, it's, you know, not that supplements are useless. I'll say this, because we do live in the modern world. You know, so I'm not hating on supplements per se. I don't think that they're necessary forever. I don't think they're something that, you know, I want to rely on. Really, what I'm focused on is autonomy. I'm focused on self-reliance. And, you know, I think truly my path forward in the near future is consultations. Once I finish up my psychology degree, that'll be a little credential there, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, kind of just working with people one-on-one, I think, is what I want to do. I love it. I love, honestly, the school is, you know, they kind of hit us with a little indoctrination here and there, but
Just a little bit. Right?
Yeah, you can. It's online, so it's pretty self-directed, okay, which is nice. Cool. So I can kind of study what I want and apply it how I want. But yeah, I love the idea of working one-on-one with people. I love putting out information. I love creating content, especially the long-form content. Social media is great for reach. It's not something I want to do forever. It's a little draining, if I'm going to be honest. But I love long form content. I love the YouTube. I love creating lectures like that. And I do want to put everything out for free, because I don't think that's going to hurt somebody's business at all. because people want Taylor to, like, they want to know exactly what to do. You know what I mean? So it's kind of funny, but, you know, I think I want to put everything out there because I'm not one to really work with somebody. I've kind of always been a self-reliant kind of guy. Like, I want to learn everything by myself. And, you know, a lot of people don't have enough time, or maybe it's not their priority and they want to work one-on-one with somebody. So I think that's the direction that I'm going to take it. But yeah, I got bigger goals down the road too. Kind of maybe try to maximize the reach, terrain-based, always terrain-based, you know, whatever endeavor it's going to be terrain-based, no doubt about it. Whether it's building proper houses, proper healthy homes that don't include this drywall or MDF or any of that crap, you know, even if it's just, you know, whatever it is, there's a lot of ways forward that we can live a modern life that is more comfortable and still get back to nature. You know, if you hardwire your house instead of using Wi-Fi, that's a great step in the right direction. You know, I always say try to just go outside more, right? Because I live in a house where, you know, it's drywall. It's, you know, it's an old house. It's like, you know, I have Wi-Fi. You know, I'm not trying to be a hypocrite here. I'm just saying, like, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do, right? And it's about moving in the right direction, right? Because we're kind of unlearning and, you know, we're in a situation where it would be very, it's almost very easy to go live in a cabin in the woods, but I don't think it's the solution because I think we're at a time where we're sharing on this, on these platforms, on social media, on YouTube, that we're getting this word out there. You can get it around the world. I had a guy reach out. He wants to translate all my videos to Spanish and post them. I'm like, great. Come on, dude. He just wants to do that out of the goodness of his heart. Like, are you kidding me? It's amazing. It's amazing. It warms my heart, and I love connecting with these people. So we can use our modernity to our advantage and still integrate proper terrain approaches. And so in any way forward that I move, it's going to be terrain-based, essentially. But yeah, I mean, look out for the consultations. I love working with people. And autonomy is a big thing for me. I love osteopathy because they don't keep people for years and years and years. My osteopath kicked me out. They won't let me come back unless I hurt myself because they set you up and then you're on your way. They actually care about your autonomy. And I think there is a need for that. You know, I think there is a need for helping people just kind of get started. But if you give them the right tools, they can do it themselves. Like, you know, not everyone knows how to fish. Teach them to fish. They're good. You know, but if you give them a fish, they need to fish for life. So, you know, a little analogy there. But I love fishing. I'm from PEI.
There you go.
You know?
Nice, dude. I love it, man. Well, I mean, that's really inspiring and encouraging. And I think there's so much value in, you know, once we find our path and our purpose, if we stay rooted in that and we pursue that in all our endeavors, the universe kind of rewards us. You know, that's been my experience. Is like, it's just like, stay true to these beliefs and look for opportunities within the space of terrain and you will find abundance within it. I mean, there's absolutely no question about it. Like, for me, like, my podcasting journey, it's been like, you know, I don't make a lot of money doing this either, but the opportunities and the doors that have opened up for me. And so what I do, you know, to make money is all direct results of having, you know, been in the podcast world and all the connections I've made, you know, and like, and so it's like so many doors open up for you once you start down this path, and it's a really powerful thing that happens. So it's like, you know, to me, that's the beauty and the value that I get from podcasting is like the connections I've made. And then also the real life opportunities that I've been able to have just out of that. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, man. So, yeah, man. Well, thank you so much. I just want to give you a moment to like shout out and promote everything. Like, please go subscribe to Beyond Terrain on YouTube. And but all of these episodes, man, like, I just feel like you're just doing a lot of good in the world. So please tell everybody how they can follow you and support you.
This is it, man. Go subscribe. Go follow me on Instagram. Like, I got a lot. We got a long journey ahead here, and I'm really excited about it, honestly. So yeah, if you want to just go follow the journey along. I just started posting transcripts on paragraph.xyz. Everything's in the link tree. If you go to Instagram and click the link tree, you can find everything I do. Yeah, that's pretty much it, man. I'm just out here grinding, learning, sharing what I learn. Love
That's amazing,
YouTube.
man.
YouTube's my favorite, but I hate YouTube because they're probably gonna delete my shit eventually.
Well, what I got a lot of suggestions for you around that. I don't even post on YouTube at all. I quit posting on YouTube a long time ago. So
yeah,
if you
man, hey, like we'll have Rumble, to talk about that.
Like, yeah, totally. But yeah. Rumble's been okay. When I can figure out how to set up my own damn stream properly, then Rumble's great. But when I drop the ball, it kind of just causes whatever. So anyway. Awesome, man. Keep up the amazing work. Thank you so very much for coming on today. We should do this again because I feel like there's so much, like maybe we could do more solution focus. This was a good, like, kind of overview of kind of where we're at with it all. And I think there's some good solutions in the trivium and the fallacies and the logic and all that stuff. But I think that, like, maybe more dive in, like, next time we dive more into the solutions around personal health and all that stuff. So, but great job, man. I really appreciate all the work you're doing. And thank you so much. So,
dude, thanks for having me. This was great. We'll definitely have to do it again.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. All right, everybody. I got another episode coming at you Thursday. And we got the Unjected show tomorrow night. So I'll catch you guys soon. Peace. There you go. And there you have it.